Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon. You're listening to episode 78, Murder for Hire. It was Friday, July 18th, 2014, and 41-year-old Daniel Markell, or Dan, even Danny to some, he was on summer break from his job as a law professor at Florida State University. Now, Dan was in the process of putting his life back together. He was recently divorced, sharing custody of his two young boys with his ex-wife, Wendy. That morning, Dan had dropped off his two little boys, who were 3 and 4 years old, at daycare. Then he went to the gym, he finished his workout at around 10:45, and was headed back for home. Dan lived in a quiet, upscale neighborhood in Tallahassee. He was talking with a friend on his cell phone. It was around 11 a.m. when he pulled up to his driveway. As he was listening to his friend talking, he saw something in his rearview mirror. It surprised him, and he suddenly interrupts the conversation as a car pulled up behind him as he was driving into his open garage. Danny says, "There's someone in my driveway that I don't know." The person on the cell phone who Danny had been talking to would hear what sounded like a giant grunt, some muffled conversation in the background, and then labored breathing. They kept asking Danny what was wrong, but Dan didn't respond. Meantime, Dan's next-door neighbor, Jim, was sitting on a sofa in his living room where he had a view of Dan's driveway when he heard a loud boom. Jim jumped up quick. He rushed over to their picture window, and he saw what appeared to be a small, silver or light-colored car, possibly a Prius, hurry out of Dan's driveway and race off. Jim didn't hear anything more, but he'd reacted so quickly because there'd been some burglaries in the neighborhood, and he was more on edge. Jim had lived in that house for more than 30 years. You could say he knew the rhythm of the neighborhood. And so that noise, well, it just didn't sit right with him. And then that car hurrying out of the driveway. So he walked outside of his house and stood on the front steps for a minute or so, just kind of looking around, listening. But he didn't hear any other noise. Everything seemed to be in order, but he still felt like something was off. So Jim decided to walk over to his next door neighbor's house. He saw that Dan's garage door was open, and as he got closer, he could hear his car was running. So he stopped. He's like, okay, I'm just being paranoid. Dan's probably just getting in his car and is about ready to leave. So Jim walks back to his house, but he didn't hear Dan drive off. So he walked back outside again and over to Danny's place. They'd been neighbors for 5 years, long enough to have an idea of each other's routines. And on that morning, it just didn't seem right that Danny had his car running in the garage, but he wasn't backing out. So he walked back over, and this time he slowly entered the garage, feeling a little foolish. He's thinking, Danny's car is still running. He's probably in a long conversation on his cell phone. And here I'm going to embarrass myself when Danny looks up and asks what he's doing. But then Jim stepped on some glass and realized that Dan's driver's side window had been blown out. And there, in the front seat, was Dan Markell, slumped over the steering wheel, his head covered in blood. His Honda was still running. Jim immediately called 911.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
We heard a loud bang and the car pulled away from next door. I came over and looked in, the garage door was up, and I thought the gentleman was backing out, and I went back to my house, but he never backed out, and I came back over, and his driver's side window is shattered, and he's battered, and can't answer. He's inside. I don't know if somebody tried to shoot him, or if he shot himself, or what. I don't know.
What's going on with him?
I don't know. The driver's side window is all bashed in. He's inside, the car is running, and he's got blood all over his head. He's not responding to me.
When the EMT got there, he was immediately rushed to the hospital. Investigators would look around the home for any sign of forced entry. It was clear that Dan had been shot in the forehead, point blank. It was not a suicide. However, the motive for the shooting didn't appear to be related to a robbery or a burglary. So who would want to try to kill Dan Markell? They knew they needed to speak with the person closest to Dan, his ex-wife, Wendy Adelson. Wendy and Dan had met in Washington, D.C. Wendy was 7 years younger, and she was just finishing up law school. The two had met via a dating website, and they hit it off right away. In fact, in less than a year, they'd gotten engaged and were married in February of 2006. So Danny's family's from Canada, and Wendy's family lives in South Florida, which is where they plan the wedding. Both families are Jewish, but Danny's family is Orthodox, and it was extremely important for them that Dan and Wendy's wedding be kosher. So when Dan and his family arrive in South Florida for the wedding, they're shocked to find out that the catered food was not kosher, which meant the rabbis couldn't be a part of the celebration. This was extremely upsetting to the Markells. But at the end of the day, Dan and Wendy were in love, and they just kind of moved on, chalking up the upsetting situation to a miscommunication. And after that, Dan and Wendy moved to Tallahassee, Florida, where they both got jobs at Florida State University. They bought a home in that upscale neighborhood, and from the beginning seemed to be the envy of all of their friends as the perfect couple. They're super lovey-dovey and appear to be extremely happy. In 2009, Wendy would give birth to a baby boy, and a year later, they have another son in 2010. Now, Danny loves his boys. They are everything to him. While at the same time, his career is just blossoming as a law professor, he's also traveling a lot for his work, speaking as an expert in criminal law. But for Wendy, life isn't so happy. In fact, after having the children, she felt a shift in her relationship with Danny, that there was this imbalance. She felt that Danny didn't view her as an equal. Remember, she had always been a very high-achieving person, and to be viewed as less than was really upsetting to her, and she really missed her family, who lived 7 hours away in South Florida. Wendy's parents, Harvey and Donna, had three kids, Robert, Charlie, and Wendy, who was the baby. Harvey was a successful dentist, and Donna helped run the practice. But there were problems in the family. Robert, Harvey and Donna's firstborn, went to medical school, where he met a young woman who his mother didn't approve of. And when he married her, he became estranged from the family. But Charlie and Wendy were really close. In fact, they were only 2 years apart, and growing up, they'd always shared a special bond. Wendy would describe Charlie as her protector, and he would follow in his father's footsteps, becoming a dentist himself, and would ultimately share a practice with his father. Dan recognized how miserable Wendy was in Tallahassee, away from her family in South Florida. So he tried to get a job in Miami so they could be closer, but he didn't get the job. And Wendy and Dan's marriage continued to devolve. About 6 years into the marriage, Wendy would write a book called This Is Our Story. It was a work of fiction, but for anyone who knew Wendy, it was clear that she was writing about her own life. In her book, there was a character about a woman who had fallen out of love. She asked Danny to read the book, but he declined, saying he just wasn't into fiction, which stung. So Dan is traveling a lot for work, and Wendy is home with the kids, and it would all come to a breaking point in September of 2012. Wendy would call Dan when he's at a conference in New York City, and she basically says the marriage is over, that she's done. Dan would beg her, please don't do this, and he immediately canceled his lecture and flew back to Tallahassee, where he gets the shock of his life. As he walks into his home, Wendy and the kids are gone, so is half the furniture, and on their bed, he would find divorce papers. For Dan, this act was unforgivable, especially when he found out that Wendy had packed up the kids and went to stay at her parents' house in South Florida. And there were other issues. Wendy would accuse Dan of hiding assets, and Dan would accuse Wendy of taking hundreds of thousands of dollars. It just got really messy and personal. Wendy would accuse Dan of emotional abuse, alleging that he told colleagues that she had mental health issues. But things really got nasty when Wendy filed a motion to permanently move the children to South Florida. And Dan fought back. He dug in his heels hard, and ultimately that motion would be denied by a judge. The only way Wendy could leave Tallahassee was if Dan agreed or if he died. Wendy wasn't the only one to be devastated by that ruling. Her parents were desperate to have their daughter and grandsons close by, and they hated Dan. In fact, emails would show that Wendy's parents, especially her mother, wanted Wendy to coerce Dan into allowing the relocation to South Florida. Donna would point out Dan's weak points as she saw them, which, according to her, were money, religion, and control. Donna suggested that the family offer Dan $1 million to sign off on the move to South Florida. A third of the money would come from Wendy, a third from her brother Charlie, who reportedly did not like Dan. They didn't get along. And the final third would come from Wendy's parents, Donna and Harvey. Donna also suggested that Wendy threaten to convert the children to Catholicism, knowing Dan was very observant in his Jewish faith. Despite these suggestions, Wendy wouldn't do any of these things. The divorce was finalized in July of 2013, with Wendy and the boys still in Tallahassee. And even though the divorce had been contentious, Wendy was seeing someone else, a social work professor at Florida State University named Jeff Lacasse, and Dan was dating too. But when it came to the day-to-day, there were still massive problems. Apparently, after a visit to Wendy's parents, the boys came home and told their father that their grandma Donna was trash-talking him, saying he was stupid. Dan was outraged. He felt that Wendy's family was purposely trying to alienate his children from him, so he filed a motion to block Donna, Wendy's mother, from having unsupervised visits with her grandsons because he didn't trust that his mother-in-law wouldn't say anything bad about him. The motion to restrict Donna's interaction with the children was scheduled for May 15, 2014, but it had gotten delayed, and a new court hearing date had not yet been scheduled prior to Dan being found slumped over on his steering wheel with a gunshot wound to the forehead. Investigators needed to speak with Dan's ex-wife, Wendy, right away. So, Dan's at the hospital, and he's not expected to survive his injuries. And Wendy's lunch with friends has been interrupted as she's brought down to the station for an interview. And she has no idea why. So she sits down, and a detective tells her that her husband's been shot and he's at the hospital.
There was a shooting at your home, or your ex-husband's home. Okay. Your ex-husband, Daniel, all right, has been taken to the hospital. He's not gonna survive.
Oh my God.
Okay.
I have a lot of friends.
I know.
How do you know that?
Well, you had two of them up there for a last minute lunch date, right?
Last minute?
Well, I mean, you went up there, you're sitting with them, you have friends.
I do. What I meant by it is that Danny didn't treat me very well, and okay. I'm so scared that maybe someone did this. Not because they hate Danny, but because they thought this was good somehow.
Oh, are you saying that you think maybe one of your friends would have done something like this?
Who would do this?
I don't know. That's why you're here, and that's why we're talking. Would you ever ask someone to do something like this?
Not in a million years.
Okay. Do you think someone would do this for your benefit without asking you?
No.
What good does it serve?
I mean, my brother, the one, his name is Charlie, the one I'm really close to, he makes a lot of jokes in bad taste, and it was a joke he made. He bought the TV for me this morning that got broken, and I was talking to him about whether it made sense to pay to fix it or whether I should get a new one, and it was always his joke that, like, he knew Danny treated me badly, and it was always his joke. He said, I looked into hiring a hitman, and it was cheaper to get you this TV, so instead I got you this TV. I mean, he would never. He's my big brother, and he's been taking care of me since I was little, but he would never. And I told that to the repair guy this morning.
Right.
That's
okay.
I said, he asked me how much it cost, and I said I didn't know because it was a gift, because my brother said it was cheaper than a hitman. It was my divorce present.
Okay.
Such a horrible thing to say. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
But even my family, who felt like I had been mistreated, would never do something like this. Never.
During this 6-hour interview with police, Wendy would call her parents on the phone to let them know that Dan had been shot.
Mom, I need you to sit down. I am fine. The boys are fine. I need you to sit down. I'm fine, and the boys are fine. Danny has been. Dan, you can put me on speaker. Yeah. Danny has been shot.
What?
And I don't think he's gonna make it. And so I know. So I found this out around 1 or 2 today, and I'm at the police station, and I'm trying to help them figure out who may have done this.
During her interview with police, Wendy is adamant that she had nothing to do with her husband's murder. So many people had come to Dan's funeral. The outpouring of love for the law professor was incredible, but at the same time, it was a reminder that someone had murdered Dan Markell, who was loved and respected by so many people, and no one could understand why. There had been no physical evidence left behind to point investigators toward a killer, so they had to look at Dan's life. Investigators were told that he was very outspoken and he was very high profile in the legal world. They found out that he had a blog called Prof's Blog, where his mantra was the importance of intellectual honesty. Detectives wondered if Dan had written something that had become a motive for murder. Early in the investigation, they had found out that he had received online threats, but pretty quickly they realized that there was nothing there. No angry student with an axe to grind. No anonymous armchair troll who decided to take action against Dan Markell because of what he'd written on his blog. But from the start, Wendy's boyfriend, the one she'd recently broken up with, was on their radar. During her interview, she told investigators that Jeff didn't like Danny because he'd hurt her. And the only clue they had was from Dan's neighbor, the one who'd called 911 and said he'd seen a car that looked like a silver or light-colored Prius driving away from Dan's house really fast. And Jeff did drive a silver-colored compact vehicle. Right away, as Jeff's sitting down for that interview, he said he wasn't surprised that they wanted to talk to him, because he'd said on many occasions that he wanted to kick Dan's ass. But he adamantly denied having anything to do with the murder of Dan Markell. And he had an irrefutable alibi. He was out of town and on a Kmart security camera video at the time of Dan's murder, so that was a dead end. But Jeff kept talking to police. In fact, he would speak with them on 3 separate occasions. And what he would say about Wendy's family got the attention of the detectives. He would tell them that Wendy had told him in confidence that her brother Charlie had looked into hiring a hitman in the summer of 2013 to kill Dan Markell. How Wendy's family, her mother, father, and brother, really hated Dan Markell in a way that went far beyond any normal vitriol between exes and their families. That their hatred had metastasized into an obsession.
I would be investigating Charlie Ailes.
Okay.
Maybe it's that simple.
What makes you say that? Why do you think it would be pertinent for us to investigate Charlie?
He's very angry about Danny. And if you met, I know he's down there, you can't get him in front of you, but you're an experienced investigator. If you got in front of this guy, he'd set off your radar, set off mine. I used to do juvenile justice, I used to do forensic psychiatry. He set off my radar a little bit. He's a weird guy, strange guy. He's a conduct disorder kid, and he hates Danny. And see, if I can put it a little vaguely, or not, but there's enough to be useful here.
Let's not put it vague. Let's go with what you know specifically.
Wendy had reported to me that Charlie had considered all the options possible to take care of this problem. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And when she said it.
When did she disclose this to you?
I don't remember when. But she said, this is it was chilling because she said, can I tell you something confidentially? And I said, sure. She said, I think Charlie kind of looked into some options, like literally saw how and why and how you would do this if you did it. I think this was last summer when she had her petition to locate, relocate, denied. That family wants her back there so bad.
This is when she disclosed this to you, was last summer?
No. This is when...
This is when...
Charlie had been examining all the options.
Okay.
He's a very successful dentist, but he reeks of antisocial behavior. Now, I could be 100% wrong, but I wouldn't want to miss that if I was investigating it. He's got a close friend who's an ex-Special Forces guy, like a Navy SEAL or something. He's out with all the time.
What did she say to you specifically? I mean, when you say
she said, can't remember exactly, but it had something to do with the amount of money it would cost to have someone killed.
And what did she say?
Something like Charlie looked into how much it would cost to have someone killed. Something like that. Some statement like that. I can't remember.
Did she give you a dollar amount? No. Did she?
But that's the other thing. He's a dentist, but he's an independent businessman. He has a bunch of practices, and he has a Ferrari, and he has a millionaire, all this kind of stuff. So he has a lot of resources.
It wasn't long after Dan was murdered that Wendy would leave Tallahassee with her two sons and move to South Florida permanently. Of course, police would file this information away, but there was nothing connecting the Adelson family to Danny's murder. They all had alibis. And a lot of people hate their in-laws, but that doesn't mean they murder them. And the murder of Dan Markell seemingly went cold, which was devastating to Dan's parents. Not only were they grieving for their son and that investigators didn't seem any closer to finding his killer, but they also felt they'd lost their grandchildren too. Even though they lived in Canada, through Dan, they'd always been a part of their lives. But after he died and Wendy moved to South Florida, all contact between the Markells and their two young grandsons ceased. And then a stab wound to the heart when they found out that in July of 2015, Wendy had legally changed the boys' last names from Markell to Adelson. She would explain that she had done this out of concern for her boys' safety, but the Markells weren't convinced. A year after Dan's murder, police would hold a press conference asking for the public's help to find a Toyota Prius whose color was called Silver Pine Mica. As it would turn out, the case hadn't gone cold because Dan's neighbor had been right about the car. During the investigation, police would go through the painstaking process of retracing Dan's movements the morning of the shooting. They would go through security footage at Dan's gym. If you'll recall, he'd been working out that morning before he drove back to his house where he was ambushed in his garage. When police reviewed the tape, they noticed that after Dan exited the gym, they saw a green-colored Prius following him out of the parking lot. It would take a lot of time to piece together, but investigators were able to get camera footage from multiple city buses on the morning of the shooting, and they were able to capture that same Prius's movements with the help of intersection cameras. It was clear that this vehicle had followed Dan into his neighborhood the morning of the shooting, which was maddening because they knew that this was the car, but they couldn't see who was in the vehicle, and they couldn't get a clear shot of the Prius's license plate number. But investigators were able to catch another break. They noticed that the Prius had a unique toll pass sticker on the window. From that, they were able to track down the green Prius to a small rent-a-car business in Miami. The Prius had been rented by two men, Luis Rivera and Sigfredo Garcia. On the rental form, Sigfredo had been listed as Luis's brother. Sigfredo was a low-level criminal with a history of drug arrests in Miami. Luis had arrests which were related to gang activity. Not only had the two men rented the car under their own names, but they'd also listed their actual cell phone numbers and had them on during the entire drive from the rental car business in Miami to Tallahassee. The cell phone tower pings gave powerful physical evidence connecting Sigfredo and Luis to Dan Markell's home at the time of the murder. But they were also able to put these two in the car together at the same time because investigators were able to acquire video from an ATM machine which captured the two together in the Prius on the day of the homicide. This evidence was enough to get a warrant for their arrest for the homicide of Dan Markell. The two men seemingly had no connection to Dan Markell. It was obvious to investigators that these two men had been paid to murder Dan Markell. And as they dug deeper, detectives were able to find a connecting thread between the men and a woman named Catherine Magbanwa. Sigfredo was Catherine's ex, and they had two children together. And Catherine, or Katie, was also dating Charlie Adelson, Wendy's brother. This connection was enough to get a search warrant for Katie's phone records. They wanted to find out who she was talking to around the time of Dan's murder. According to cell phone records, she was speaking with both Charlie and Sigfredo. Detectives had also found out that after the murder, Katie had made some large cash deposits, and she would also deposit checks every couple of weeks from the Adelson's dental practice, even though she wasn't an employee there. Katie would also purchase a used luxury vehicle below sticker price that was Harvey Adelson's old car, and she had a receipt for breast augmentation, and it was believed that Charlie had helped her pay for the surgery. This was all very compelling circumstantial evidence, which prompted the Adelson family to be put under surveillance. They needed to find more connections, more evidence to tie them to Dan's murder. And in their quest to find more evidence, investigators would do something called tickling the wire. Essentially, they put a sting into play. An undercover FBI agent would confront Donna Adelson, Wendy and Charlie's mother, outside of her condo. Remember, investigators believe that Sigfredo Garcia, Katie's ex, who also goes by the nickname Tuto, and Katie were both being compensated by the Adelsons for putting together a hit on Dan Markell. And so this FBI agent goes up to Donna, and he alleges that he's the other hitman's brother, remember, Luis Rivera, and that his brother's in a rough patch and needs $5,000. When Donna says she doesn't understand what the man who's come up to her on the street threatens to expose a murder conspiracy that he believes that she and her son are a part of, he then hands her a folded up piece of paper and walks away. The note is the press release of Dan's murder with a phone number for Donna to call to pay the money. Here's audio of that undercover FBI agent as he approaches Donna in April of 2016.
Excuse me, Mrs. Adelson?
Hey, go. Just want to give you this.
Listen.
You're scared.
Good, don't be scared. Listen, just want to let you know that we know that your family has been taking care of Katie and her friend, Luca, for quite some time after your problem on your attempt to resolve. And I want to let you know that my brother, he's incarcerated. He helped your family with this problem you guys had up north. And we want to make sure that he's going through some rough times. We want to make sure that you take care of what he's going through, the way you're taking care of Katie and Tuto. Well, this looks like it.
Donna would call the number, which went directly to that FBI agent. And she's basically like, I have no idea what you're talking about. The undercover agent refers to Katie and Tuto and re-ups that she needs to get this $5,000 to him. And she says she'll call him back. And just like the investigators were hoping, she would call her son Charlie, where they have this very coded conversation. Donna says, quote, I got some paperwork hand-delivered to me. And Charlie asks, does it involve me or other people? And Donna replies, well, probably both of us. You probably have a general idea of what I'm talking about. And Donna tells her son that she wants to find some time to talk to each other. Charlie then calls Katie. He tells her about the guy who came up to his mom and asks her if she knows anything about it. And she says that she has no idea. But based on their conversation, both of them are rattled by it. On May 25th, 2016, Sigfredo Garcia, Katie's ex, and the father of her children, is arrested and charged with the first-degree murder of Dan Markell. In the probable cause affidavit for his arrest, investigators would say that they believed his motive for murdering Dan stemmed from the desperate desire of the Adelson family to relocate Wendy and the children to South Florida, that the only connection to Dan Markell's murder in Sigfredo Garcia was Wendy through her brother Charlie, that was the connection and the alleged motive. The Adelsons, Wendy, her brother Charlie, and their parents Donna and Harvey, would release a statement saying there's been a lot of unsupported speculation that the Adelsons had something to do with the murder and that the speculation was absolutely false. They categorically denied having anything to do with Dan's murder. A month later, Luis Rivera would also be arrested and charged with Dan's murder. But then police went quiet. There were no more arrests. And it was confusing for many people who couldn't understand why the police weren't arresting the person or persons responsible for hiring the alleged hitman. As it would turn out, the prosecutors were playing a long game. Because in October of 2016, roughly 4 months after Luis Rivera was charged with Dan's murder, it was announced that he had struck a plea deal with prosecutors. He would confess that he was shown a picture of Dan Markell and that he was paid $5,000 in traveling expenses from Siegfredo by the person that he referred to as the lady. Luis would ask why they were killing Dan Markell, and Siegfredo would answer that the lady wants her 2 kids back. Luis said that after Dan pulled into his garage that morning, Siegfredo Garcia jumped out of the Prius, ran up to Dan's car, and shot him twice. Then he jumped back into the Prius and they left. Afterward, they would dump the gun, and as they drove back to Miami, Siegfredo would call Katie and say, "Everything's done. Make sure you have my money. I'm on my way." Luis's confession would give them enough to arrest Katie Magbanua on October 1st, 2016. At first, she was offered full immunity to testify, but she turned it down. And so, on September 23rd, 2019, Katie Magbanua and Siegfredo Garcia's trials would be combined. The prosecutors would allege that Charlie had arranged to pay Katie, Siegfredo, and Luis $100,000 to murder Dan, so Wendy could get full custody. At that time, Katie would deny any involvement. And Siegfredo would say that Luis had murdered Dan all on his own, that he had nothing to do with it. Wendy would testify during their trials, and she would say that she had nothing to do with the murder plot. And Luis Rivera would testify in both trials for a reduced sentence. Remember, he pled guilty, and as part of that plea bargain, he was sentenced to 19 years in prison. On the stand, he would say that he was recruited by Siegfredo in a contract killing of Dan Markell, and that Katie Magbanua was the middle person. He claimed that he didn't know the names of the people who had hired them, but the reason for the killing was that the lady wants her 2 kids back, that she wants full custody of the kids. Ultimately, Siegfredo would be found guilty of first-degree murder and would be sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. However, Katie's trial had ended in a mistrial because of a hung jury. And you might be wondering, why are they not arresting Charlie Adelson? And the answer to that was that they were working on it. Before Katie had been arrested in October of 2016 for Dan's murder, she'd met Charlie at a restaurant called Dolce Vita, and the FBI had been listening, but the restaurant was really loud. But because of the quality of the audio, they couldn't make out exactly what was said in 2016. But by 2022, the FBI had some really great proprietary technology, and so they were able to enhance the audio, and they hear Charlie making some incriminating statements. He says that they didn't mention his name, which makes him think that these people only know part of the story. He adds, "If they had any evidence, we would have already gone to the airport." Those cleaned up Dolce Vita recordings were enough to give prosecutors the ability to file first-degree murder charges against Charlie Adelson. He was basically saying, if I thought they had enough evidence, I'd already be in the wind. In April 2022, Charlie Adelson was arrested for first-degree murder, solicitation to commit first-degree murder, and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. He would plead not guilty. A month later, 2.5 years after Katie's mistrial, she would be found guilty and sentenced to life without the possibility of parole for her part in the murder of Dan Markell. Charlie's trial would begin in October of 2023, where the prosecution would present their theory that Donna Adelson went to her son Charlie and was like, "We've got to get Wendy back to South Florida with the kids." Charlie then went to Katie Bagmanwa, who he had been dating at the time, and he asked her if she knew a hitman to murder his former brother-in-law, which prompted her to reach out to her ex, Siegfredo Garcia, who then enlisted Luis Rivera. But the defense would drop a bombshell when they argued that Charlie didn't have anything to do with Dan Markell's murder. In fact, they would say that Charlie was a victim himself of the hitman who had murdered Dan in order to extort money from Charlie. Wendy would also testify at her brother's trial, and she would say that she had nothing to do with the murders and that she had no idea that her family was allegedly being blackmailed by the killers. Even though Wendy denied any involvement in the murder of her ex-husband, prosecutors would describe her as an unindicted co-conspirator. Katie was also called to the stand, and she categorically refuted Charlie's claim that an extortion was going on. She would testify that the murder-for-hire plot to kill Dan Markell was all Charlie's idea, that he'd approached her 9 months before Dan's actual murder, and she would give details about the night after Dan's murder, that she had gone over to Charlie's and fallen asleep, and that when she woke up, he had told her that his mother, Donna, had just left his house, and that she'd given him a bag full of money, and inside, the bills had appeared to have been washed. It was Charlie who then directed her how to give the money to the hitmen, that he'd packaged it in a Ziploc bag and then put it in a paper bag. Charlie would actually testify on his own behalf. He would say that, yes, he'd made a stupid joke about hiring a hitman to kill his brother-in-law, but that's it. That was just a stupid joke that he'd made. That the night of Dan's murder, Katie had confided in him that she'd shared his struggles with his brother-in-law with her ex, Sigfredo Garcia. That she told Sigfredo that the family was going to offer Dan $1 million if he'd let the boys come live permanently in South Florida. According to Charlie, Katie had told him that Sigfredo had murdered Dan and that he wanted to be paid a third of $1 million. Remember, the family had discussed coercing Dan into relenting and allowing Wendy to move with the children to South Florida, and that they each were going to pitch in a third of the money to do it. Charlie was going to pay a third, the parents were going to pay a third, and then Wendy was going to pay a third. Charlie said that he was told just hours after Dan's murder by Katie that if he didn't pay the hitmen the $300,000 within 48 hours, they were going to kill him. And so that same night, he had given her the $138,000 from his safe, and he admitted that he paid her thousands more in the following months and had asked his mother to put her on the payroll at their dental practice. And as far as the audio from the Dolce Vita conversation he'd had back in 2016 with Katie, he explained that the conversation wasn't about him not thinking they had enough evidence on him, otherwise he'd be in the wind, but that he was the victim of this scheme. However, on November 6, 2023, Charlie Adelson would be found guilty of first-degree murder after the jury had deliberated for just 3 hours.
You are sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of release or parole.
Charlie Adelson maintains his innocence and is appealing the verdict. But the investigation into the murder of Dan Markell isn't over. Donna would speak to her son Charlie after his guilty verdict, multiple times. Not realizing that she's being recorded, she talks about the seeming lack of concern about the family from her daughter Wendy.
They had been really good nannies, and I gave up our daughters up. Because now the boys are older, they go out with friends, they can get things on their own. So she doesn't need grandma and grandpa. Okay, grandpa, I have one son that I don't speak with. You have one that is close to being dead. My daughter, who I love, is knowing this. I don't get it. I don't get it.
She also tells Charlie that she's getting things in order, creating trust, and making sure that her grandchildren are taken care of. As she discusses plans for a suicide, but also the possibility of fleeing to a non-extradition country. On November 13th, 2023, Donna and her husband Harvey were at the airport to catch a one-way flight to Vietnam. Before she steps foot on the airplane, she's arrested for the murder of Dan Markell. Here's body cam audio of the arrest.
My husband's almost 80 years old. He can't come with me?
Please, can I help him?
Donna has pled not guilty to these charges. Her trial is set to begin in September of 2024. At this point, despite the fact that the prosecution in this case considers Wendy a co-conspirator, she has never been indicted on charges related to the murder of her ex-husband, Dan Markell. She steadfastly maintains her innocence. Stick around for our bonus episode where we discuss the case in more detail. And as always, thanks for listening. From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a pie-in-the-sky production recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. were produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.